Or just think about like the drive for the spice, right? Like that's literally been a driving mechanism for, you know, people to traipse all over the planet and decide they're going to be at this new place because they want a spice that's there. It's literally like what it is.
But then they have the caucasity to be like, okay, spice is too readily available now, so we're going to not season our food because that means we're rich. We need to taste the essence of the original food. Ridiculous. But yeah, that's a tangent.
Hi, I'm Gabe.
And I'm Kat.
And we're the Ghouls Next Door. Talking about spooky stuff.
As we do.
Like the spice. Like lots of sand. Everyone hates sand.
Giant worm with much teeth.
Giant worm that looks like an anus. Let's be real. Giant worm. No water. Oppression. Yeah. Religious uprisings, whatever. A lot of that is terrifying. I'm not gonna say it in my nose. As we do. So this is our science fiction series where we're talking about spooky stuff that maybe is in the future, maybe it's in an alternative world, maybe it's a cautionary tale that we should all be worried about. And today we're talking about Dune, which we originally, when we were going to do this series, we were going to talk about Dune. And we were going to talk to the person we invited today. And then we were like, no, we don't need to do that. And, you know, we've just had two episodes where we invited specific folks to talk about diversity in the future and in science fiction. And I will say the Dune film has a little bit of that going on, which is nice. That's not the case always with when we adapt things or when we look at things, so that's a benefit, right? So that's cool. And but Dune is one of those science fiction medias that I was talking about in the past few episodes where it's just something that I didn't catch my interest because it wasn't specifically about people who look like me and I didn't really care. I'm done. Though I totally understand there's a lot of conversations to be had in it, and there's some cautionary tales, some criticisms, and other things that are there that people often miss because they just take it for what it is at face value. Which is like white guys say.
White guys have a very long space time where so much happens, and I didn't understand a lot of it, and that's okay. I think I need to watch it again, but it was like 2.5 hours.
So, it's very long. It's very long.
I got really into it by the end.
When Zendaya pops up, then it's like, oh, wow.
I was like, oh, wow, look at that.
It's funny because like they advertise Zendaya like as like a really big part, and then she was in there for like 7 minutes. Like her total runtime was like, I think 13 or something. But
I guess just in the next one, if that happens, she'll be more in it there. But this one is short.
Yes. Also, watching it at home, you know, that was a problem that the director says. So we, just like in our last two episodes, had invited, you know, experts or big fans of what we were talking about to geek out with us, or at least like geek out to us to let us know why that thing is so important and so exciting. And so for this media, which I have reluctantly watched, just this one film, but there is a whole book series, so I know someone who has read the books and is working through the books, and is a fan. It has to be for what they put me through. Like I said, everything I've learned about Dune has been against my will, and so now everyone else has to do that too. So we're inviting my partner Mike Levitt to talk about Dune.
Welcome, Mike.
Hi, yeah, great to be here.
Yes, you might recognize Mike from our Evangelion episode. We love to invite you on to talk about things that you really, really love or that were important to you, because then it makes us feel like we should care. good at making us care about it.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll make other people care. And about I'm Dune. Looking forward to learning more about Dune. But why don't you tell us a bit about your fascination with Dune, the story, but also just like with science fiction, like what drives you like to read and watch and learn about science fiction media?
So I've always been more interested in fantasy and like that sort of escapism. There's a few science fiction things I got into, but Dune is relatively recent. Actually, when the Dune movie first came out, I guess 2 years ago, it was, I was just very well primed to be very into this story.
Yeah.
Because Dune, even though it's a science fiction story, has a lot of fantasy elements.
Yeah.
It's like a dukedom and emperor and like it's all of these fantasy tropes. There's prophecies, there's sword fights, but then it has this backdrop of, you know, 20,000 years in the future, like technology we can't even comprehend. And just it's got some really cool science fiction things and then also the fantasy tropes that I'm used to. So it was a really nice, it like bridged the gap between the two things. And I don't know, I just was like, I was ready to be a Dune guy at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, it's like the Dune fandom goes really hard. And I think that's like what I really appreciated about even just the three, like this being the third episode in our science fiction episode, is like fans for this media, like they go hard. They love the thing, and it's because it's science fiction, and often what we're covering also has like a backlog of like a supportive media or even like the start of their media. So like the whole books series, even though some of them it's like you should skip them, right? There's like an order and like a number that you should be reading. But there is like, we could keep going, like we could watch this thing and then we could keep going and keep learning. But yeah, I totally see what you're saying about the mix of fantasy too. Cause like, isn't the, not to get off topic already, but isn't like the way that the ships are run just like really kind of not scientific? It's like, isn't it like a drug or something?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So one of the things about the world of Dune is it's like what happens when a society is dependent on one single resource. In this case, it's spice. And it's sort of like a super enhancing drug, but it also has all these like psychedelic things where it unlocks your mind. And yeah, they do space travel where the Spacing Guild, the navigators, essentially live in a suspended pool of spice, and their bodies have been mutated to be these weird, like, I don't remember the accurate description, but I picture them as like worm people where they're like elongated and like just super weird in there.
Yeah, the episode of my God, Rick and Morty, when the dad is like the imagined version of him is just a worm guy.
Yeah, it's like that, but they're suspended in orange mist. And then they do a bunch of drugs and they see the future, and then the ships go super fast and they just point the ship in the way where they're least likely to die.
That's fantastic.
And that's how they navigate through space at in insane speeds. The author, Herbert didn't actually say how they moved through space, but then when David Lynch made his movie, the author was there on set and David Lynch was like, they fold space. And the author was like, oh, hell yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds
that's how it works now. They fold space and then go really super fast through
that's
it.
That's funny. Using spice. I love that idea of Frank Herbert being on set with David Lynch and them just being like, let's just do this. Let's try that.
Like,
and like, the only clips I've seen of that was from the VFX artist React, right? Where they showed like the shield. It was just like a square of like
just a big rectangle box. Yeah.
So you know, I mean, I think it's super interesting because, you know, the book was imagining this feature, and so we can get really creative about what that looks like and how it functions. And I do like the idea of it being organic focused and abstract in a way that can be really fun in science fiction versus like, here's the science, like the actual science, which was, I also loved with The Expanse, right? When they actually showed us, you know, how the first person made the engine to break through and get to space, and how fatal that could be, but then having something like wacky, right? But then having like a film like David Lynch's to test like what our scientific or like technological limits were at that time and get really creative with how it could look visually. And then now, taking that even a step further, like we have all of this technology and all of these abilities to create this landscape now and being able to see it like, you know, even closer to what its original vision was.
Mm-hmm. So I guess like from a scientific perspective, the influence of like herbs and spices and various plants would influence human evolution over a long period of time. Like how, you know, even just the use of mushrooms, there's like a whole documentary on Netflix about how mushrooms like mess with your brain and make it like ready to learn more as you evolve over time. I don't know how legit that is, but I remember watching it and being like, medicinal plants.
Yeah.
So it seems legit to me in that way.
Or just think about like the drive for the spice, right? Like, that's literally been a driving mechanism for, you know, people to traipse all over the planet and decide they're going to be at this new place because they want a spice that's there. It's literally it is.
But then they have the caucasity to be like, okay, spice is too readily available now, so we're going to not season our food because that means we're rich. We need to taste the essence of the original food. Ridiculous. But yeah, that's a tangent.
But yeah, you know, that being said, there's, like most science fiction, right? There is, threads of truth, right? There's inspirations in our everyday life that inspired the writer, and it's, you know, commentary on things that are happening. It could be cautionary tales about things that are happening. And so some of them are subtle, some of them are not so subtle, but I think, again, it's one of those things that sometimes we get so caught up in the massiveness, right, of this story and of this world, that it does take another watch or it'll take a read to really understand the depth of like what is trying to be covered in the show or the film.
Yeah.
One of the cool things about Dune is just there's so many like little throwaway things that have all of this backstory to it. And it's not like, you know, like normal fantasy backstory where there's, you know, tales about the characters. There's like, oh no, this happened like 10,000 years ago. And it like one person did this one thing and it directly impacted what we're doing today. It's like one of the most thorough, like world building. And that's probably why it became so foundational for like modern sci-fi stories.
Which not to be confused with Foundation trilogy. Before we hop in, because I do want to, I'll give the description of the film, and then I want you to just kind of explain us what's going on. And for anyone else who's like, I watched it, I don't know really what happened or where it was. But before, just for folks who are watching, you know, Kat and I tried to dress up as best we could. Little disappointed Kat didn't glue PlayStation controllers to their face.
You know, there's a picture of it, so if you want to share it with the internet, it is an option.
That's true.
It's like 80 degrees.
It is. It's very hot. Which, I mean,
and I'm not protecting against sand, so there's no real motivation, you know, to glue PS5 controllers to their face.
Yes.
Other than just fun.
But if you are watching, you'll see that Mike is not in the cosplay that I thought he was going to be in. So you want to explain your Hawaiian shirt there?
Yeah, I'm dressed like an aspirational Fremen, because part of their religion is terraforming Dune to be a paradise. So I'm like dressing the way they want to dress in the future.
You're dressing for the world you want, not the world you have.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
The environment we aspire for. that's good.
You don't dream of giant sandworms, Mike? That's not the world you want to live in?
Yeah, what a crazy time. All right, let me tell you what Dune Part 1 is about, and then we're going to talk about the actual books a little bit, because like I said, anything I know, I've learned against my will. Just like, you know, Mike turning over to look at me and say, you want to know what happened? And I'm like, no, I don't. And then he's like, well, here's what's going on. Well, here's a crazy situation. Let me tell you about his sister. Let me tell you about the politics. I'm like, what is happening now? And every time, just equally as lost. But Dune Part 1, which you can absolutely watch. It's a hefty one, but it's beautiful. It's pretty. And watch it on a good screen with good sound because it's a little quiet. Also. But it's about a noble family becomes embroiled in a war for control over the galaxy's most valuable asset, while its heir becomes troubled by visions of a dark future. That's pretty concise. That's exactly what happens. Directed by Denis Villeneuve and starring Mr. Chalamet and Zendaya at some point.
There's a bunch of like bigger names on there that I was like, huh. Yeah. I have no idea they're in this.
That's cool. And they also, like I said, it's not a story like the Fremen are like darker skinned, right? Because they're in the sands, they're in the desert.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, Paul, Mr. Paul, and I'm sure Duncan Idaho and them are generally pretty white people in power. And are the Bene Gesserit, is there a specific, are they a range of what they look like?
Yeah, you don't really meet very many of them, the Bene Gesserit they're like a school, and anybody can send their daughters to the school to be trained to be Bene Gesserit. In the story, most of the Bene Gesserit characters you meet, I think, are white, but I mean...
Yeah, that happens, right? But I mean, in the film, it's cool because, like for example, Duncan Idaho, which is like the best name to have in space. Like, imagine you're like in space, right? And there's like all like the potential of names in the future, and your name is Duncan Idaho. But it's plays like Jason Momoa. But we also have like Javier Bardem is in there. Talking about Zaddy, Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac. Oh my God. Okay.
Yes.
I was looking at him like for a really long time, and I was like, is that Oscar Isaac's? I'm not going to look it up. I should. I didn't. But that's amazing.
You know, he's doing a lot of science fiction or just fantasy things. But there's quite a few. There's like a lot of color that's happening in it. That and then I'm totally blanking on her name, but that one character who like comes in at the end and is like, "I'm gonna save your life and get you out of here." She's wearing the whole garb.
Oh, Liat Kynes.
She's like really cool.
She's the planetologist. Yeah,
super rad. And I don't know if that person is of color in all those people. Like, was Oscar Isaac's the dad not white?
they're really nonspecific in the book. I will say Kynes is a dude in the book. So they changed that character's gender, but it predominantly the off-worlders are all coded white, colonialist, like imperialist, that kind of thing. And the Fremen are all coded to be like Middle Eastern through their culture. They even use like words that show up in the Quran and all that type of stuff. So they're like ethnically, because it's so far in the future, they don't, it's sort of implied that like ethnically everybody's just sort of a mix, but definitely the cultures of off-world are all like coded to be like Western, and then the Fremen are like very intentionally coded to be Middle Eastern.
Cool. That's really interesting, especially just like the way that things develop. I don't know, people who maybe didn't understand what was going on. Just like, I don't know, I'm sure there's somebody out there like that who was like, what is happening? What's this guy? What are we doing? What do we want? What is, like, what's the deal? What's going on? What is Dune? Like, when we pick up in the story in part one, and Paul's there, and then there's also, like, the Bene Gesserit, which have, like, a really cool story that you told me, and I was like, I would be interested just literally in just that, because that's like really creepy, but also problematic. They got a lot of problematic things going in there. But it's also like, what? Yeah. What's going on? What's the gist?
Of Dune.
So where do we want to start?
The beginning.
Whatever the beginning is. Like, take us on the trip.
The,
My favorite rocket ship.
So the plot of Dune, very basically, the House Atreides, led by Duke Leto, is in a position where they are threatening the emperor of everything. I'm blanking on his name, but he's Christopher Walken in the next movie. But he is like the main, he's the emperor, of course, but Leto has made the House Atreides so powerful through politics, money, and army that they actually are threatening the emperor. And so the emperor wants to get rid of them. The way they do this is by gifting them the planet of Arrakis. Arrakis, of course, also Dune. That's where the spice is made, and that's where, like, it's one of the best ways to get money in the entire galaxy, because it's the only place that can make spice, and spice sells for obscenely high amounts of money, as we alluded to, because it's used for space travel and it's used for a bunch of other things. People who are currently in control of Arrakis are House Harkonnen. They are essentially direct rivals to House Atreides, and the Emperor knows that House Harkonnen would, it's their main revenue source is Arrakis. They're going to attack Atreides because of the, like, they're now in control. They want to get Dune back. They want to get, you know, obscene amounts of money, even though they already have it.
So, they want more, you know, greed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Emperor knows that that's going to happen. Pretty much everybody knows it's going to happen, except Paul. And so Paul's uses the point of view character for everybody to explain, hey, this is a trap. This is a, you're not going to survive, all this other stuff. So that is like the inciting incident that happens before the movie starts. The movie starts while they're moving to Arrakis, and it's already a done deal. Like, there's that big ceremony where they're all standing and like all these weird people come out of a spaceship and like there's all these decrees. Like
chanting.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So that's like the main inciting incident, and the and then yeah, so then they go to Arrakis, and the interesting thing about it is when they go there, the Fremen people are expecting a messiah at some point. And this is where the world building becomes really neat, because the Fremen religion was intentionally manipulated thousands of years ago by a Bene Gesserit person to accommodate some future Bene Gesserit. So we can sort of talk about them for a quick moment, put a pin in that. The Bene Gesserit are an ancient order, an ancient religious order of women that date back to possibly now, like they're that ancient, maybe 20,000 years. And they essentially, their order is trained to be super forward thinking. Like they make plans that span centuries. So they do one thing and then, you know, are all like on the same wavelength where they're like, they do this, the next step, they do this, the next step, they do this. And they are all totally okay not seeing the fruit of their labor and knowing that it might be at 400, 500, 600 years or 1,000 years before anything comes of it.
Oh, wow.
So because of this, when humanity was populating the galaxy, a Bene Gesserit person came to Arrakis and was like, oh, snap, this place sucks. Everything here is hot. There's giant worms that'll eat you if you're on the sand. And the people who live here, they're going to need some help. So they become like they go into the Fremen people. They join them. They like become they presumably become like a mother. They become a wife. They do all this other stuff. And they subtly manipulate the culture so that their religion is set so that if a Bene Gesserit comes in the future, they can work together and like they can break down barriers essentially and like just build trust almost instantly. This happened however many thousands of years ago. So the specific myths that this Bene Gesserit person put in place were ones that were like, there is someone who's going to come and save the people of Arrakis because it's such a harsh environment that these people need to be saved, quote unquote. Yeah. They're actually thriving in the desert. They're doing just fine. But the Bene Gesserit came and was like, oh snap, we gotta help these
all
people.
These poor unfortunate souls.
Oh no.
They don't know Jesus.
Yeah. So fast forward thousands of years, Lady Jessica and Paul, they land.
You're in space, your name's Jessica. Are,
and the other one's Jessica, name was Paul. Oh my god.
Yeah. Paul specifically is very on the nose. But they come, and then the Fremen people are already like expecting some kind of savior. They're not expecting it, but they have all of these myths and stories about a savior coming, and they have all these things like, he shall know our ways. He's like doing all, like, he knows how to do stuff that he shouldn't know how to do. So that's when they land. Now, the reason why Paul is sort of like this chosen one type person is because he can see the future. And that's sort of alluded to throughout the whole film, where he's having these dreams that he's not sure if they're real. Let me know if you have any like questions or anything I should elaborate on, but otherwise
he can see the future. Got it.
Yeah.
I guess the question is like, did he see that he becomes he's a chosen one? Like, did he see that?
Yes and no.
It confused me as a whole. I will say that. Like, cause like he was like really sad about it, where he was like, I don't want to be this way for one. Then he was like, I don't want to be this chosen guy. And then later he seems like really excited to be the chosen guy. Like he's like ready for people to go to war for him. And I just didn't understand how we got from like, I really don't want this. This seems like a horrible time for everyone involved, to heck yeah, let's lead a holy war and let millions die. Like 100%, let's go. And I just didn't understand how we got from the, I hate this to I love this. In the middle somewhere. So that's what confused me. But I probably skipped a few steps. That was the main question that I wanted you to answer, because I was like, I don't get why he's like this.
So the way I always understood it is at a certain point, his presence doesn't matter.
Okay.
He's done enough of the prophecy for the Fremen to like stir themselves up into like a zeal and to attack the galaxy. Like there's enough pieces in place that his presence can only guide the holy war. It can't stop it. And so he, in the later books is just sort of like, he's very reluctant. In the books, he's never like happy about it. He's just at some point he accepts like this is out of his control, and he's essentially just riding the waves of fate to see if there's any sort of favorable outcome.
That makes a lot more sense. Okay, you've answered my question.
I think it's such an interesting idea, because it is like a trope that we see in fantasy and science fiction of like this, you know, colonial white man fantasy of I come to native lands and save these like, you know, indigenous people because you're, you know, a god king chosen boy who literally just exists and that's enough. But I think what's interesting is, you know, that that's kind of the point, is a different point than what people sometimes interpret it as, because they see that and they're like, okay, yeah, another one of these chosen ones. But that's just the whole thing, is that it's not like it's not chosen. And that's the problem. Like, it becomes really toxic, and having religion mixed with the political is really disruptive and horrible for the people and just like society. Yeah. I mean, that's like something that Frank Herbert even said, like flat out.
Like that was a reflection of society.
The political thing, let me see if I can find the quote that I sent you, Kat, was he said, when religion and politics travel in the same cart, the riders believe nothing can stand in their way. Their movements become headlong, faster and faster and faster. They put aside all thoughts of obstacles and forget the precipice does not show itself to the man in a blind rush until it's too late. So essentially it's just like, we're putting all our stuff in there and we don't learn, we don't stop. And that's kind of
it's phase-based instead of like, is this actually the good choice / decision? It doesn't logically make sense.
Well, we don't take into account all the specifics, right? We're not judging everything individually. Instead, we're putting this blanket idea over everything, which is like when we have the problem like now of having religion tied to political sides, right? Like having conservatives who are super religious and they're putting that in there, it becomes this idea of right and wrong instead of being more nuanced the way that the world is, where we're like looking at issue to issue. How does this work? How does this serve me? How can this, like, can we look at it? Instead, it's like, is this a part of my religion or not? Which is not how we're so, like, that's not how like politics are supposed to work. That's not how society is supposed to exist.
That's true. True.
Yeah. I know in the case of Dune, it's like very much like the threads are a direct like criticism of that. And one of the interesting things about like the Messiah thing that they have going on is that not only is it a Messiah, but they show you how it came to be. And it's not like some prophecy. It is like somebody intentionally did this. And it's because of the choices that several characters made that they're in the situation now. And the other thing is, as it goes on, it shows how much of a not good thing it is. It is like a direct criticism of that. As you see Paul going through it, and is like he's as much caught up in it as the Fremen are. Like, he doesn't really have much choice, because it's just, there's too much like mystique around him. He can't escape the you know, fate that's been thrust upon him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's kind of like when we were like there, like he's also kind of a victim in that way, because he doesn't have a choice, right? He has to fulfill this thing that was set out before him. And I mean, he still like could not do it, you know, but also I get it. Like, you end up caught up in those things, and so many people are putting all this pressure on you, literally like centuries of people putting pressure on you. So I get that.
Yeah.
I do think it's like you were saying, there are direct references to our lives and like commentary on that. And I was reading like an article that was talking about just even how close Dune was to like Arabic, like some of the words that they're using. So it's like, they say they go on razia or raids, they wear abba and burqa robes, and fear a devil called Shaitan, and so on. So it's like, these are like literally like inspired. But then also, when we're thinking of what they call Paul when he arrives, is a reference to potentially real life situations.
Yeah. They say Mahdi when he first arrives, and that's a term that has two meanings. And it's the it's one, it shows up in the Quran as the person who like helps the Messiah return, essentially. And again, I could be I don't know everything about this, but what I was reading, it's the Mahdi will come back with Jesus and like will bring about, you know, the end times, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it also is in reference to the Mahdi uprising in the late 1800s, which is a real war that happened in Sudan. And so like the author, Frank Herbert, was using it as sort of like, to tell the audience that like, this is a tense situation. The Harkonnens, who are in control, are like just straight up sociopath, like evil people. They do not care. They are the like you know, the Christopher Columbus of their time. They're bad people.
Yeah.
But then the like specifically using the term Mahdi was like to call it out. And there's a lot of like real world influence all throughout the book. Another thing I remembered was Atreides is a family name that goes back to the Trojan War.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually like a bit where they say that Paul's lineage can go directly back to Agamemnon. Yeah. So just another thing going into the Messiah complex.
Yeah, because it worked out really well for Agamemnon.
Yeah, he's totally fine.
That's so like, and that's super interesting. Just like, it's pretty on the nose when you're literally using the words. Like, I was looking up after you mentioned that just to me. And it is like, it's tied to a very real thing that happened that is and it's also this difference of interpretation of that event, right? That revolution from like the eyes of the people who in Sudan who were interpreting it this way, and then like the British colonial folks who were like, oh no, right? Like interpreting it that way. So it's funny to like kind of flip it on itself for them to be calling him that. And that just kind of shows how twisted the narrative had become by that time. And how controlled it was to just like, we're predicting that, you know, they're going to need, you know, someone to come and save them, like a white savior complex here.
Yeah.
And so like, we had to set that up. And I think that's like really quite crazy. But there's also like, I mean, like most science fiction of that time too, there's some classic tropes or themes that come up, like, isn't there some conversation to be said about eugenics too in the Dune world?
Yeah. So that's the Bene Gesserit's whole thing. Their plan that spans centuries is to breed a perfect emperor. I think the term was Quasits Heterok or something. I forget how to pronounce it, but so that is what Paul is. That's why he can see the future. Mm. The Bene Gesserit, they in the world of Dune, they are seen as, and again, like the world of Dune is also like super patriarchal, but they're seen as like status symbols.
It's also gross.
Because there is a lot of like that kind of marriage. Like Lady Jessica isn't Duke Leto's wife. She is his concubine. And they actually make a point where Leto's one regret is not marrying her to give her official status. But he was leaving that open in case he needed to make a political marriage down the line.
In case, you know, you gotta leave your options.
You know how it goes. Yeah.
I should have been thinking you know? Yeah. I gotta leave my options open.
That's the whole thing. Because in most societies, marriage has nothing to do with who you like somebody. It's literally political alliances / women aren't people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even 20,000 years in the future, we go back to a feudal society, even though we've got like laser guns and space travel.
Cool, vibrating knives, but we still have like kings and queens.
Yeah.
So the eugenics thing for the Bene Gesserit, because they're going out and like they're being placed, because again, the people don't care who they are, just that they are a Bene Gesserit person. So they get placed somewhere, they have a child with their partner, and part of the Bene Gesserit training is like perfect control of your body. So they control the gender of their baby. And they just always have a female baby to just pass the line on. And eventually they're going to have an almighty male baby that will be the perfect god emperor. So the reason that there's like that this is neat in
god
the
emperor.
Context of Dune.
Yeah.
The reason this is neat in the context of Dune is that Jessica intentionally disobeys the Bene Gesserit because Duke Leto really wants a son to carry on his name, and really wants a son with her because they're actually in love. And so she willingly breaks the Bene Gesserit teachings to bring a boy into this world who just so happens to be right at a point where it's like 98% chance. It's the Kwazet's Heterak or, you know, God Emperor. And just so happens that Paul is brought up to be this amazing person. So he's taught how to think like a supercomputer, which is, that's a whole other thing, but they have mentats, who are people who are trained to be as smart as supercomputers because they don't trust computers due to reasons. There's a automaton uprising where humanity almost went extinct. Wow, so then all computers got banned.
Wow.
That's why there's all these crazy, you know, drug people, because, yeah, you know, you got to be a computer when you're flying a spaceship.
Yeah, right. So you can't like have robots do it. It has to be people. Like,
yeah, we don't trust them.
Yeah, because robots are outlawed. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's because under capitalism, out. That's what robots will do. Like, that's like what all the Microsoft people are like, don't do it, but also buy our stocks. Don't do AI though, it could lead to the extinction of humanity. And it's like, okay, which one do you want?
What is it, what's the answer?
But yeah, and like spice capitalism in this future world, of course the robots had an uprising, because under capitalism of course they're gonna be like treated horribly or whatever, and they're gonna make robot people, I guess. That's crazy. That's just straight up bonkers. I find Dune way more interesting now that you're explaining it to me, because genuinely, like, one, I did watch it, but like I was just not in a mental place to be like, I can watch this 3-hour movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, at the very beginning, I was like, this is interesting. And at the very end, I was like, this is interesting. But in the middle, I got so lost along the way. This is very helpful. I appreciate you giving us this context.
And it's like, it's also broken up, right? So like the intention was to not have to smush it all together, because there's a lot and they had to choose what to put in there. Like, they removed the whole point of like how they travel, because that's so convoluted, and like how we get there, they're just there, which is like they had to pick and choose what parts we're going to dwell on, because it is such a massive story. And that's the other reason why I was like, we could talk about Dune, but I'm not doing it unless you're here, because I felt the same way. Like, I don't think I'll ever be in the right mindset to understand and watch Dune and be like, yeah, this is it, I got it. I get this one. I'm on Duncan Idaho's side. Like, this is never gonna happen for me. I can watch it any number of times, but listening and knowing what's going on in some of the books, like, there are things that stuck with me, like unfortunately the complications with his sister he almost had to marry, which is like super gross. It's time
that's in the second book. Okay. It starts getting real weird.
Yeah,
thankfully they did not do that, but I don't know. It might come back, because they're so obsessed with genealogy and we'll say soft eugenics.
Okay. Oh, Lord. It's like back to the time where when you're royal, you like only marry your cousins.
Mm-hmm. That's the handle exactly. How that worked out.
Yeah, so... there's a whole thing. The old lady from the beginning who puts Paul's hand in a box.
Yeah.
She's like the leader of the Bene Gesserit. And she is super mad at Jessica because she messed up this thousands of year long plan, Jessica. And they're going to have to start over again. And also, there's a chance because Paul has those genes and there are plenty of people who are on similar levels where they could, you know, pair them up together. But Paul, of course, as it's alluded to, falls for Chani, who is a wild card, we'll say, for the genealogical project.
Yeah, because
she's from the desert, has no pedigree, we'll say,
because yeah, like no
it's super gross. Yeah. Becomes one of the main antagonists for a little bit because she's like super mad about this.
Yeah, reasonably. I think we even get that glimpse of kind of that tension at the end of the film where like she's like letting him in, she's like interested. But it's still like these people are like, who do you think you are? Like, you have to prove yourself, you have to like kind of at least meet us here in some mm-hmm. way, which I found pretty interesting. I would have liked to see more of her, and I know we will in the coming films. Like I said, they advertise Zendaya a lot, and then we're like, she's just a fever dream, and she's just what he dreams of every few minutes. And then she speaks like three lines. And I was like, I just watched that part. That's my dude. oh man, there was something I was thinking of that I wanted to bring up. Oh, I totally forgot.
I was going to try to help, and then my brain emptied of all of its knowledge. The whole time.
That's okay. Well, I wanted to ask. I remembered. What is the pain box, dude? What is that?
Oh, I have no idea.
That's
not a clue.
Is it the same in the book?
Who sticks it in, and why, and like, what's it proving?
Yeah, it's in the book. It's used as foreshadowing for all the troubles that Paul's going to have on Arrakis. But I don't know.
There's a lot. I'm sure there's so much that we're not even like covering. How many books are there? Do you know?
For Frank Herbert, the original author, he wrote 6 books. His kids kept writing books.
Yeah, I think they said something. And they never stopped. 13.
So there's like 50 something.
Oh wow, that's crazy. Okay.
For Dune fans, all the books written by his kids are bad, so you don't read them because they get like even weirder. There's what's called the Golden Path of Dune.
Okay.
There's always good stopping points. Reading the first book, great stopping point. It's concise. It's arguably his best work, and it's there. It's good. You can read the first 2 books if you want to get Paul Atreides' full story. If you want to get the House Atreides' full story, you can read the first 4 books. And then if you want to read everything Frank Herbert wrote, you can get the first 6 books. And everything after that, it's if you like reading stuff that has Dune on the title, keep going. If you want to read good books, probably move on.
Yeah, read the Foundation Trilogy, or there's a few that kind of came out in a similar time that have like the aesthetic, right? The feel of what you're getting with Doom. Maybe not exactly the same messages. I've never read Foundation, so we'll see. That was one that was also very hefty, and I was like, what am I doing? I'd rather be reading Octavia Butler. which we might talk about if people want me to geek out. I guess my question is, so where, like, we kind of left off, like, right when things, I feel like, are starting to get good in the first book, right? Because that's how it was made, because it's made with the intention of having more. So what should we be looking forward to in this next movie?
Should be looking forward into so all throughout the first chunk, the Fremen are like this unknown, like they start talking about, like, they did a census of Fremen, and they realized it's actually like a like small percentage of the total Fremen population. And just seeing how they operate, because they're essentially like completely isolated in the desert. So they're all about water conservation. They're all about like living with the desert. But then they also have, like, they made the still suits, like they made all of this technology to live on Dune. So it's just seeing their culture and seeing how they work inside of their dwellings, their cities, is something that I'm really looking forward to seeing. I'm looking forward to seeing Christopher Walken. It's going to be pretty cool. Florence Pugh, she's going to be in it. That's pretty cool.
Love anything she's in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious what they're going to do with Paul's sister. Jessica is pregnant at the end of the part 1.
Oh, I did not even catch that. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. So she's yeah, she's pregnant. There's a thing, I think Paul points it out because again, he's had all this super training so he can just read people that well. But yeah, she is pregnant at the end of the movie.
And isn't it her interaction with the Fremen at the end what impacts his sister? Is it that?
That'll probably be in the second movie. But yeah, because the book, it like, you know, it's like 1 year and then it skips forward like 3 or 4 years. So we'll see if that happens in the movie. I assume it will. But I'm curious how that's going to go. Also getting to see Zendaya actually have a character. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Always look forward to that.
Yeah, that's super true. And I think like, you know, moving forward and we kind of just like got that introduction. So it'd be interesting to see how they flesh out the whole Fremen society, especially because the taste that we got of the diversity that they were putting in and kind of the focus that they were choosing in the first book or first movie, I feel like will bodes well for what they're going to do for the next one. Hopefully anyway, to really maybe give it a little more attention or respect than we might have seen in the hands of others or starring other people.
Is there one more question in terms of like for the first movie, was there anything that like was missing from it in terms of like what happened in the books that would be really important that people probably know that, like, you know, they made a creative decision or whatever, but like it's good context to help you enjoy the movie more?
So they made sure to put in all of the plot beats. So it like if you've read the book, then it goes like it follows the plot broadly. Mm-hmm. One of the criticisms I've seen pop up pretty frequently is you don't get a sense of time from when Atreides is in control of Dune. Because they are actually ruling Dune for many months before the Harkonnen attack.
It feels like it was like the next day.
Yeah,
it was just sort of like right away. And they don't really convey how much time has passed. And there's one scene that that keeps popping up in the book is this dinner scene where Duke Leto brings all of the local rulers of Dune. You know, they got like the bankers, you've got like the port people, the people who control the star ports, people who make still suits, all these other folks. And they're all over for dinner. And then like Leto has to leave because the Harkonnens are doing some sabotage or something. So Paul is put in charge. And he actually has to, you know, be a duke for that period of time because they're all like, why are we listening to this kid? He's like 14 or 15 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so Paul actually has to like prove that he's, you know, been trained for this his whole life. And it's a cool scene. You get to see like how Paul interacts more. You get to see the family unit of the Atreides because they're actually like good in the sense that like the both Leto and Jessica both want what is best for Paul, and Paul really wants to do well by them, and there's like no animosity there, and they really like trust each other and they work well together. And that's sort of missing from the movie. You just sort of have to guess. And it would have been cool to see more moments of them just being a family together, or more moments of them ruling Arrakis and like showing that like Duke Leto is actually just a super honorable person, and he's, you know, one of the good ones.
Yeah.
So it's like getting to see that side of him would have been a really good thing for me anyway.
Yeah. I vaguely remember even like when you were talking about how Duke Leto and Jessica like loved each other. Because there's a little bit of that, but it kind of still felt like
tense. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that either. So I'm glad that it was good context because I agree. It didn't really come through for me too much.
Like he does mention he should have married her, but it doesn't feel like he should have done it because he cares for her and because he wanted to establish her position. It kind of, it felt weird, like the way that he addressed it. So maybe like it would have been nice to have had some moments that were just them even more like concrete in their affection for one another, even if that that might even just look different to us. And like you were saying, of their connection with Paul, because it does feel like he was a bit of an accessory and just kind of like, this is the kid. Do you have to be a good prince? You know, do the princely duties. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to do the fight. You know, like it was felt kind of generic in that way.
Yeah. In the book, Paul doesn't do anything until like the last third.
Oh, that's funny.
But he's the point of view character. And this is another thing that I saw someone talking about online was like the Atreides family unit was the protagonist. Mm. And that extends not just to Leto and Jessica, but also to like Gurney Halleck, who's Josh Brolin in the movie, Duncan Idaho, Thufir Huat, the Mentat, the guy with like the lip thing, and Dr. Yue. Mm-hmm. They're like the leaders of House Atreides, and like they were all the protagonists. They're all making the important decisions, doing all the important stuff. And Paul was there too. Until he was finally in a position where he had to act. And that's sort of when he starts interacting with the Fremen and starts, you know, essentially trying to become a Fremen. So it's missing that first half. And I think it was because they knew it was going to be a long movie. So it felt like they were rushing. Yeah. And they're just like, we have to make sure we have all the pieces in place and we just got to go, 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 go. So I mean, like the perfect Dune movie is probably like 6 or 7 hours long.
Yeah, it's probably a show, but it's a big production value too.
Yeah.
So it could be a show that expands like for that whole time that we could actually build up on all those different relationships. Because even like the doctor, was Yue, you said?
Mm-hmm.
I remember it was like the whole big, you know, reveal. And then I was like, but I don't like what? Like, I didn't feel as betrayed or like as, I wasn't connected. Like I didn't really even spend time with Duke Leto enough to be like super heartbroken about it. Other than like, it was Oscar Isaac. And I was like, no, boy.
In the book, they say Dr. Yue is a plant. Like chapter 3, it is like in the beginning, there's like Baron Harkonnen is just sitting there like, well, good thing we've got Dr. Yue.
Oh, that's good.
So it's the whole time. And like, they're like, there's this whole intrigue thing where they know that there's a mole or they know that there's like somebody going to double cross them the whole time. And they're just trying to figure out who it is. And the Harkonnens are just essentially trying to make them think it's the Bene Gesserit, because this is another thing that they do. They're also spies. Mm. They have people all over the galaxy just gathering information. So that's why the like relationship between Leto and Jessica is kind of more important, is because they're also testing it by making like trying to turn him against her while also like getting ready for Dr. Yue to
is Yue's whole thing though that like I thought it was because they had his wife, is that real or is he just a spy?
So they kidnapped his wife and are like torturing her essentially, and it's like the only way to get her free is to do
so
this.
He does like care about them, so it does suck. Cool.
And he's also, another thing they go into is the doctors have this like super strong indoctrination that they go through where, and you know, also because Duke Leto is actually honorable, he's like completely 100% devoted to Atreides. It's just, you know, his love of his wife was overruled that. And his plan was to try and kill both of them at the same time because that's why he gave Leto the tooth, because he wanted to fulfill his end of the bargain, save his wife, and then kill Baron Harkonnen. The sad thing, of course, is that his wife was already dead.
Yeah, that's you know, there for it's hard to tell such an expansive story in such a short time. And I think, you know, we got a little closer, we got a little better because people are really interested. And if anything, it promotes you and inspires you to want to look into it more, and to learn more. And it was something like on the you know, surface, I had this entire understanding of it. I think it was actually like some weird article that I found after seeing some like post about oh my god, what's that musician's name? Oh my god, what's her name? It's right there. She was married to Elon Musk.
Oh, is that Grimes?
Thank you. I was like, Grizzly. Grimes. I saw someone like post about Grimes and her like her interest in it, and it spurred this whole like conversation, because I think it said something like she was like it wasn't feminist enough or something, like the script when she saw it or something. And then there's this all these comments under it, under the article. I didn't even read the article, but it was just like, you're missing the entire point, you know, because people are like trashing, you know, this the main story. And it was like, no, you're missing it. You got to read. You have your media literacy glasses on, which is why I was like, we got to cover it. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this thing that you have embarked on and are ingesting for the rest of us. So you put it into terms we can understand.
Yeah, of course. I love talking about Dune. So thank you for letting me talk about Dune for an hour.
I will say, Isaiah did seem to like the pieces he did see of it. So if you want to talk to somebody about Dune again after this period of time, he might be excited to do that.
Yeah. And for those listening, let us know what you think of the Dune films, either one, what you think of. Well, guess wasn't there one that was gonna get made and didn't, or am I making that up?
Yeah, there was one before David Lynch's. I don't know if that is real or not, or if it like, you know, got lost or something. But there's the ones most people know about are Denis Villeneuve's and David Lynch's.
Excellent. So let us know what you think of those films. And if you've read the books, let us know. If you haven't watched any of it, or if you have and you're like, what was going on? And this was helpful. We'd love to hear from you about it. I hope it was helpful, because it was for me. It was good to to put it into context and to get kind of excited about things that are easily just being like, oh, that's a lot. That's an expansive like fantasy novel. It's just like a Game of Thrones in space. I don't need it.
It was Game of Thrones in space slash Star Wars. Like, it was like a mix of all.
Yeah.
Them.
And I'm sure it inspired those works, right? Uh-huh. To some level, was an inspiration to kind of the political dynamics that we see unfold in other media, which is another reason why I was like, we should really talk about it when we're talking about science fiction. So thank you again so much for joining us and talking to us for an hour and you know, carrying. I hope your shoulders aren't too tired from carrying the entire conversation for ghouls. But that being said, don't get married.
I'll eat your kids. Or your kids or your
kids
be
are your chosen one.
A chosen one Messiah guy.
And that sucks, man.
Yeah, that seems really sad.
That's a shame.
That's rough, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, bye.
Bye.